This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million and tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcast.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, where performance is driven by original fundamental research on a global scale. This is Putnam Today, produced in association with the University of Southern California.
60 senators and one president in a room. That's what the healthcare debate came down to this afternoon. We will get you caught up. The Federal Reserve is meeting on interest rates, and also our special coverage of the climate conference continues. Today, the haves and the have-nots in Copenhagen. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Bank of America. 1 year into a 10-year, $1.5 trillion investment in low to moderate income communities. And by Palm Wonderful, 100% pomegranate juice in the curvy bottle, the antioxidant superpower. Information at pomwonderful.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday, the 15th of December today, and it is great, as always, to have you here. You know, the economy is kind of rolling along. We learned this morning factories cranked up their output last month. Also, wholesale prices were up. Both of those numbers will be prime topics of discussion at the meeting the Federal Reserve is having today and tomorrow on interest rates. Those rates, and when they might go up, are among the more important economic levers the government has. It's all but certain the Federal Reserve will leave them right where they are tomorrow. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale explains why.
It's still only a guess whether stores can pass along all their new costs to customers. In a letter to Congress, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke says slack in the economy means inflation is unlikely to take hold anytime soon. So the Fed is signaling it has no intention of raising short-term interest rates. But inflation fighters see something to worry about. Former SEC Commissioner Joseph Grunfest is now a Stanford business law professor. He says for some, it's just about time for the Fed to ease up on the accelerator.
If you let inflationary expectations get settled in the economy, it then becomes much more difficult to actually reverse those expectations. As an example, they look back to the 1980s and the experience of Paul Volcker, where he had to jack up interest rates to very high levels in order to quell inflation in the U.S.
But most experts say the Fed's loose money policy has yet to take hold in the economy. Just look at the lack of jobs, they say. So they don't expect any change from the Fed other than an acknowledgement the economy is looking better. At the same time, T. Rowe Price economist Alan Levinson says the Fed is aware they'll have to raise rates as the economy gains strength.
There's probably a lot of hustling going on behind the scenes to get everything in place that they're going to need to be able to raise the federal funds rate when the time comes to do so.
Levinson expects plenty of warning ahead of any interest rate increases so as not to frighten a fragile economy. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
It has been a wild week or so in the political fight over how to overhaul the U.S. healthcare system. First, Senate Democrats decided to let 55-year-olds buy into Medicare. That got undecided over the weekend by Connecticut Independent Joe Lieberman. And then the president decided he needed to have a chat with everybody, which is how 60 members of the Democratic caucus in the Senate found themselves at the White House today for some good old-fashioned political arm twisting. Speaking to reporters after the meeting, the president said he is certain that once the American people find out what's in the health care bill, it's going to pass. Frankly, we're kind of lost track ourselves, so we figured it was time for an update.
Previously on Healthcare Overhaul.
Know this. I will not waste time with those who have made the calculation that it's better politics to kill this plan than to improve it.
Then came death panels, rationing, and grandma.
We should not have a government program that determines you're going to pull the plug on grandma.
Chuck Grassley, Republican senator, while the other Chuck, Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer, says he'd help grandma.
So you need to inject some competition into the insurance industry. The best way to do that is a public option, which is a moderate, modest proposal, sort of in the middle of public option land.
Not on my watch, says independent senator from Connecticut, Joe Lieberman.
The public option plan is unnecessary. It has been put forward, I'm convinced, by people who really want the government to take over all of health insurance.
Joe wins. Public option, out. Medicare expansion, in. For the older uninsured.
Folks between 55 and 64 today and 65 are essentially in a world of hurt.
Senator Ron Wyden. And who's going to pay for all this? Asks Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison.
The reform that we're going to see go into effect right away is huge tax increases.
Are people going to have pay more taxes because of this?
Yes. No.
Senator Lieberman, part two.
As a matter of conscience, I will not allow this bill to come to a final vote.
Next time on Healthcare Overhaul.
Government-run healthcare, out. Government-managed healthcare, maybe. And the other issues.
That we should not be using federal funds for abortion.
Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid.
We understand that before year's end, we're going to do a comprehensive healthcare reform.
Oh, you don't believe that, do you?
Now coming your way for the holidays. Miracle on 34th Street.
Or Capitol Hill.
That was our new healthcare reporter, by the way. Gregory Warner is his name. Much more to come from him as this story rolls on. Wall Street rolled on today. The major indices took a breather, waiting for the Fed's pronouncement tomorrow, I suppose. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Didn't come early enough to help this year's holiday travelers, but Boeing's new airplane finally got off the ground today. The 787 Dreamliner is years behind schedule, in part because of the high-tech way it was designed and put together. Cost-conscious travelers sometimes go for a decidedly more low-tech option, though, the bus. But even those who can afford to fly are taking to the roads because new long-distance bus lines are using technology to their advantage. From WNYC in New York City, Andrea Bernstein reports.
Brandon Proust is not the kind of guy you might expect to take the bus. He's wearing a nice suit and overcoat and has a laptop slung over his shoulder. The international finance worker might have taken the train.
But there's no Wi-Fi. So if there were Wi-Fi, I'd probably take Amtrak, but...
Did you ever think, like, oh, the bus is kind of low class, it's, you know...
Not this one.
Proust is riding New York to Boston on Bolt, one of the new long-distance bus companies that have sprung up in recent years. Turns out both Bolt and a competitor, Megabus, are luring passengers by combining coolness and the cost factor. They offer free Wi-Fi from the moment you board. Dale Moser is the CEO of Megabus. He says his customers do say to themselves, I can save a lot.
And I can flip up my laptop and surf the web and catch up on Facebook or Twitter or, you know, my corporate accounts. And I can do that. I can't do that in my car. I can't do that on an airplane.
A new study by DePaul University in Chicago, being released this month, says Moser has it about right. Ridership on these buses has seen double-digit increases in the past year. About 4 in 10 passengers are using technology. Professor Joe Sweeterman's been studying the bus lines, which now take passengers from city to city in about 20 states. And he says Wi-Fi on the bus gives riders something they may not have on a plane or a train, control.
And that serves a big psychological role. We're finding that people who are suddenly in a dead spot find themselves a bit powerless. And that's, I think, where the inner city bus has a huge advantage.
Lots of passengers, especially the younger ones, don't much like turning off their technology on the plane. On the bus, it's completely different.
From the minute people sit down, they pull that technology out, and it almost becomes an extension of their office. And so I think that's why a lot of passengers are willing to take these relatively slow buses.
Slow, but traveling at the speed of broadband. In New York, I'm Andrea Bernstein for Marketplace.
Climate talks that are happening in Copenhagen do come with a little bit of irony attached. I mean, there they are, talking about global warming. After all, the carbon-intensive flights to get there, the private limos whisking people to and fro, not to mention higher heating costs in a Danish winter. In just another couple of years, though, this kind of international meeting could require no travel at all. Instead of planes, it's going to be the virtual events industry that's going to be taking off. Sally Herships has more.
Kim Stone works with PlanView, a software company. Every year it hosts a conference for its clients. It's a big deal for the company. But this year?
This year we started hearing early that customers were getting their travel budgets cut, so they weren't going to be able to fly or have a hotel budget.
PlanView was in a tricky position. It had already booked a hotel for the conference in San Antonio.
What do you do? Do you have the customers, just a handful of them come, and it's not quite what it usually is? Do you cancel the event entirely?
Stone says PlanView didn't do any of those things. Instead, it postponed the hotel reservation and went online. This way, clients could cut out the travel costs by sending pixels, not people. Stone sent me a screenshot from the event. It looks like a modern convention hall in 3D. There are avatars, mini digital versions of you, standing around talking to other avatars. You can click and go into different rooms for presentations or talks, just like at a real conference. Inside, you watch videos or chat online.
You're immersed in a web browser in an environment. It looks very 3D. It's very interactive. You have multiple things going on the screen. You can see everyone who's in a particular room with you.
Video conferencing and collaboration have really matured a lot over the last few years.
If you're willing to pay. Karjek Hosanagar is a professor of internet commerce at Wharton. I tried to interview him using a variety of free video conferencing services, but none of them worked. That's why he sounds so fuzzy.
Sally, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
If you're there, I'm not able to hear you.
He can't hear me. So eventually we gave up. If this had been a real virtual meeting, the organizers would have known exactly when we logged off. They can track your every move, which, spooky as it sounds, can be a big advantage for a company.
Here you know exactly what sessions the person attended, how long did they stay in each session, when did we potentially lose the interest of this person.
Hosanagar says this kind of information isn't normally available at face-to-face meetings. It's one of the reasons companies are more interested in virtual events. Unisphere, the company that ran PlanView's event, has doubled its list of big-name clients from 45 to 90. And tech giant Cisco Systems is wrapping a $3 billion deal to buy the video conference firm Tandberg. But there are still advantages to meeting in person. I'll let this British Airways ad do the talking.
Nothing beats the face-to-face meeting. The firm handshake, the eye contact, getting your actual foot in the door.
So how do you make up for not meeting in person? Mark Jeffrey is a technology professor at Northwestern University. He says if you use a high-end video conference, it can absolutely make up for not being in the room.
The power of the really high-definition systems is you get to see what they're feeling, their facial expressions, and it's not uncommon in these kinds of meetings when it gets done that people actually stand up and want to shake hands because you get fooled into that you're actually there.
For companies looking to save, this can sound like a great solution. So I asked Kim Stone if PlanView will be going virtual from now on.
So here's the thing. The feedback was really positive for a virtual event. That was great. This was wonderful. Thank you so much for doing this. But, you know, next year we'd like to see you in person.
Internet commerce professor Karthik Hosanagar says the key is to understand that virtual meetings are not meant to replace one-on-ones. Instead, he says, you should do some of both. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Coming up, the real cost of attending the conference in Copenhagen.
At home, I buy 10 lemons for 50 cents US dollars for 1,000 shillings. Look at the price here. 35, that's almost $10.
But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial slid 49 points today, almost a half percent, closed at 10,452. The NASDAQ gave back 11 points, that's a half percent, finished at 2201. The S&P 500, why it slumped 6 points, that's also a half percent, wrapped up trading at 1107. A new report today said home builders were more pessimistic about the pace of recovery. Investors slipped out the back door of KB Home. Shares fell almost 3%. Pulte Home shed nearly a half percent. After a two-year delay, as I mentioned, Boeing's new 787 passenger jet took off on its first test flight today. A lot of investors missed that plane, though. Shares fell more than 2/3 of 1% at the plane maker. Everybody's favorite oil cartel, OPEC, predicted demand for petroleum will rebound faster than previously expected. Investors pushed up Chevron stock a 0.1% today on that news. Wells Fargo, as we mentioned yesterday, took steps to pay back its government bailout, the last rescued bank to do so. Shares edged up 2/3% today. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 3.59%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Bank of America. 1 year into a 10-year, $1.5 trillion investment in low to moderate income communities. And by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. Let us give you the business 24 hours a day. Just tap marketplace.org into your mobile phone for the latest financial news and reports from around the globe on how the economy is affecting our lives.
Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Wednesday. In Washington, the Labor Department releases the Consumer Price Index for November. The Commerce Department reports on construction of new homes, also for November. And the Federal Reserve wraps up a two-day meeting on interest rates and the economy, its final one of the year. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdahl.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter.
Our letter segment today starts with former Vice President Al Gore. He and I sat down last week to talk climate change, a conversation about which a lot of you had opinions. Daryl Rees from Atlanta, Georgia, thinks much of the overall discussion about the economics of global warming kind of misses a bigger point.
If we put more resources into climate change, there will be less for cancer treatment, combating hunger, recreation, etc.
I chatted with our European Bureau Chief Stephen Beard the very next day to get an idea of what life at the UN Climate Summit in Copenhagen is really like. He described the protests and the protesters, closed-door meetings and policy conferences. And then right at the end, he said this.
And that has convinced many that in spite of all the circus and the carnival, something meaningful, something serious will emerge from Copenhagen.
That is where Luke Haberstad from Oakland, California took offense.
It is precisely because there are so many committed activists that the issue is being taken so seriously around the world. The protesters are no doubt theatrical and boisterous, but they aren't just acting odd. They are speaking out to convince our leaders and, indeed, the world of the need for change.
Speaking of protests, that same day we reported that AT&T wants iPhone users to help solve its network problems by cutting back on how much data those users use. Tim Thomas from Austin, Texas, and many others from elsewhere said they don't see how it's the customer's responsibility to not use the technology they were sold. They also said that AT&T better watch its back.
It's their responsibility to spend their money to upgrade their network, or they'll lose customers to any company that is willing to do so.
A couple of weeks ago, we mentioned how the U.S. Patent Office is going to put patent applications for green technologies at the front of the line. Starting at the end of that line, it can take 3 years for patents to be granted. That's a state of affairs Tony Smith from Hollywood, California, finds absurd.
3 years? It can take up to 3 years to get a patent approved? Now, there's a jobs program for you. The Patent Office should hire more examiners so patents are approved in 6 months or less.
Finally this week, an update on an investigation we did with ProPublica about high-pressure recruiting tactics at the University of Phoenix, the largest for-profit university in the country. We said its admissions counselors were paid in part based on how many students they sign up. Today, the Justice Department announced the University of Phoenix has settled a whistleblower's lawsuit challenging those recruiting practices. Phoenix did not admit any wrongdoing, but it is paying $67.5 million. If you have something to share with us, you know what to do. Marketplace.org. Click on that link that says Contact. There are officially 3 days left in the Copenhagen Climate Conference, and negotiators are getting down to it. World leaders start to arrive tomorrow. Corporate leaders, meanwhile, have been in Copenhagen for days now, as have our reporters Sam Eaton and Stephen Beard. We've got Sam on the line now for the corporate climate change update. Hi, Sam.
Hi, Kai.
All these CEOs that are there at this conference, Sam, what kind of companies do they represent, and why are they there?
It's actually a pretty diverse group, Kai. You have companies like Nike, you have Duke Energy, you have General Electric. All of these companies are positioning themselves for what will happen post any agreement that comes out of this. What they're frustrated about is that it's very difficult to be heard within the chaos and chatter of this incredibly large and complex UN process that's happening here. Just to give an anecdote, you know, here in our marketplace press room, we didn't actually need to get any printer paper because we're getting hundreds of press releases a day, and we're just using the backside of those to print out our documents and our scripts. So imagine these CEOs coming to Copenhagen and being lost within this sea of messaging that's happening surrounding all of these closed-door talks.
And it's worth a mention that these business leaders, at least the ones from the States, are used to having their voices heard. I mean, they've been influencing climate policy in this country for years now, right?
They are, and you know, maybe this isn't the right venue for them to be heard. You know, and a lot of people say the right time for business's message to really come through would have been a year ago. But their message is incredibly important to how this thing takes shape. The way they want to influence the deal is really about creating regulatory certainty so they can make these investments in whether it's clean development or clean technology, what have you. They need to have the certainty to put the funds into this. One of the CEOs I talked to, Kai, is Daniel Abbasi. He's the head of a U.S. investment firm called Mission Point Capital Partners. And he told me that now he's got about $300 million invested in climate-related projects and technologies all over the world. But that number could easily increase by a factor of 10, given a deal at the end of the climate talks here.
I would say this is the most strategic sector of the 21st century, the clean energy economy, because it is going to require tens of trillions of dollars, but it's going to pay back multiples of that because of the efficiency associated with it, of the job creation associated with that, and the economic mobilization associated with that. So it's a great investment.
And some people are saying about $500 billion a year is needed to get the global economy off of fossil fuel. So you have all these investors and businesses looking around for opportunities. I mean, that's big money.
Let me ask you this, though, Sam. What are the odds that coming out of this meeting, there will be the guidance and the new regulations, or at least a start to it, that's going to let businesses feel confident investing?
Well, I think, Kai, it's important to say what the businesses are looking for out of this is the signals rather than the details to shoot the gun and start deploying trillions of dollars in capital. This is a long process. With Kyoto, it took, I think it was the 3 years after the Kyoto Accords were signed, that all of the details were hashed out on how those investments might be made and what the rules were surrounding them. So that's still a long ways off. These businesses are just looking at this saying, let's get the process started so we can go here.
Let me change gears on you here for a second, Sam, and ask you, with some of these leaders starting to show up tomorrow and the next day, I imagine things are the mood is changing, if you will.
It is. You can feel the tension building. It definitely took me a lot longer to get in to the conference center this morning. And just before I came here to talk to you, Kai, I was out in the lobby of the media center, and they've actually put in metal detectors going from the outside of the main conference area into the media center. So I'm not sure what that's about. You can definitely, there's definitely a change happening as we go into these next days.
Sam Eaton, our man in Copenhagen. Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, Kai.
Those world leaders Sam was just talking about, they're all going to have their own cars or their own motorcades. Many of them will show up on their own planes, and they're going to stay in hotels that are charging more than $1,000 a night. Nice living for those who can afford it. Delegates to the conference who can't, though, are having a tough time, as Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
Don't tell Margaret Kienka, a delegate from Uganda, that she's been living high off the hog in Copenhagen. She's been scraping by at the summit on little more than $100 a day.
We are staying, with people. We couldn't afford a hotel. We buy bread from the shops and we make sandwiches. Yesterday only ate cookies and popcorn. Copenhagen is really, really expensive.
Margaret has not been inside a restaurant or even a cafe since she arrived. Every day she shops for food at a supermarket near her digs. Even that is proving prohibitively expensive.
At home, I buy 10 lemons for 50 cents US dollars for 1,000 shillings. Look at the price here. 35, that's almost $10.
Instead of 50 cents.
Instead of 50 cents, and I have not been able to drink a lemon. I feel like my stomach is holding out. And I've not eaten an orange. Yesterday I bought one banana. I ate one banana for lunch with my popcorn. It's killing me.
Margaret is here as a member of an NGO or non-governmental organization. She's lobbying negotiators on the issue of climate change and deforestation. Xavier Mugumya is here as an official in the Ministry of Water. He's a bit better off. His daily allowance, $300. But even the most modest hotels here cost $250 a night, and Xavier blew 3 days' worth of his daily rate on emergency expenditure.
Buying warm clothing.
Oh, you had to buy some warm clothing?
Yes, I had no idea what it would be looking like here. So you have to buy something for what you put in the hands, what you wear.
Gloves,
and then undies, everything. Otherwise, you freeze here.
Throughout the two-week summit, Copenhagen has laid on scores of events for the delegates, mini-conferences, seminars and exhibitions. Travel by metro is free, but Xavier has been scared off attending some of the events.
I cannot go sometimes because the metro will not be going directly there, and sometimes I'm fear if I take a cab, I don't know how much the meter will read.
Poor countries are struggling to attend this summit. Their negotiating teams are much smaller and less specialized than those of the developed world. They're at a disadvantage, says Hugh Cole of the aid agency Oxfam.
These developing country negotiators clearly have a distinct handicap, and it's down to a lack of resources. Despite that, they are putting up a real fight and representing their country and their poorest people. This is real David and Goliath stuff.
Only this time, many observers say, Goliath seems likely to win. And they say the poor countries won't get anything like the financial aid or the deep cuts in carbon emissions they're seeking. But Margaret Kienka is hoping for the best.
We hope whatever comes out will help us. We have no alternative but to make that investment. In terms of time, in terms of cost, our government investing in this, and we hope something will come out.
In Copenhagen, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, helping to solve tomorrow's retirement savings challenge. This is Putnam Today. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
This final note of a Tuesday afternoon, one that I promise I am not making up. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack is in Copenhagen this week for the climate talks, and it was there that he announced an agreement with the American dairy industry today. Farmers are going to cut their greenhouse gas emissions 25% by the year 2020, more, I'd wager, than almost any other major industry. Cow poop is the key here. They're going to capture the methane from all those millions of bovines and turn it into electricity. Vilsack said, and here I quote, "Manure technology, it's a win for everybody." And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow gave back 49 points. That's a 0.5%. The NASDAQ dropped 11 points, also a 0.5%. The S&P 500 slipped down 6 points, a little more than a 0.5%. Thanks to Jennifer Collins on our Morning Report crew. The Marketplace Morning Report is produced by Rod Abeed. Coming up next time from Copenhagen, better climate living through taxation.
I don't know whether we are masochists in Denmark, but if you want to change attitudes, then it's not enough with a minuscule tax. You'll have to do a rather hefty tax.
I'm Kai Rizdal. I hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.